Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Terror trifecta foreshadows more in 2025. Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol Lieberman, a psychiatrist and your terrorist therapist. Yes, 2025 has not started off well. Well, it started off with a bang, but not the kind we want. There is reason to believe, and I will be giving you these reasons, that this is a foreshadowing of 2025, what's going to be happening in the next year, throughout the next year, and probably beyond. There were three major things, hence the word trifecta, that happened on January 1st. And you know, you've heard some about some of this, although I don't think you know all the details of the background. And I'm going to be tying this together and explaining about why it is that we can expect, more terror in 2025. In other words, just because there's a terror attack one terror attack or even, and actually the terror trifecta isn't, they aren't all attacks per se. The first one is the one that happened in New Orleans, the vehicle ramming, vehicle jihad. That is was a typical terror attack. And the terrorist was radicalized and pledged himself to ISIS. The second part of the trifecta is the incident, also an explosion in Vegas. Now, that wasn't a terror attack per se, in the sense that the terrorist, in single quotes, didn't say that he was loyal to a particular terrorist group. In fact, it was kind of the opposite, but he did create terror for a different reason. So it was kind of a positive terrorist attack, as I will explain. And then the third part of the trifecta is, again, not an attack per se, but it happened also on January 1st, and it is a foreshadowing. It is a very worrisome sign. And that is, on the same day, right after New Orleans and Vegas, the pro-Hamas protesters came out and protested, what they do best or worst. And they were calling for an intifada revolution. So basically calling for more terror attacks, and particularly, also with the extra aspect of it in regard to Israel. So I am going to start with the first one and give you some behind the scenes. You know, the mainstream media does not, this was the part of the first attack that was just so incredibly frustrating. I mean, of course, the attack itself was horrible, but for me, I couldn't believe, and this is, I've talked about this before, how when there are terror attacks, the media, the mainstream media, is the last one to let you know, that it's a terror attack. And in fact, that's what happened in New Orleans. You know, they were, there was, they were some people or some authorities who were kind of mentioning this could be, or we're going to investigate this as a terrorist attack. But there were others saying, no, this isn't a terrorist attack. Now, I, in my frustration, took to Twitter and talked about how, yes, this is, before they announced it for sure that it was a terror attack, I said it first that this is a terror attack. How did I know this? What made me so smart? Well, I mean, besides the fact that I have been studying terrorism since 9/11, it had the signs, it had the characteristic signs. And the point is that it shouldn't be just me pointing this out. It should be the authorities. They should be knowing about this too. So what were the signs that it was a terror attack? What were the, pathognomonic signs, the early signs, the unquestionable signs? And they were, first of all, the fact that it was a ramming attack, which is a favorite of terrorists. And we just had that in Europe, the attack in Germany at a market, Christmas market. There were actually two attacks in Germany at a Christmas market, and there were other attacks. And as I talked about in a prior podcast, and so it begins. I knew that that was going to be the beginning of more copycat attacks. I mean, they've been doing ramming attacks forever, so it isn't just since Christmas. But so that was the first clue. Then the second clue was on the back of the truck, there was a furled up flag. Now, I'll admit that it wasn't quite clear that it was an ISIS flag. I mean, it wasn't unfurled, and so it didn't say ISIS on it, but you could see some white. I mean, so like, duh, of course it was an ISIS flag. And they weren't saying anything about that either until quite some time after. So, okay, so who was that and why did he do that? The perpetrator of the first New Year's Day attack was a man named Shamsud Din Jabbar, or probably Shamsud Din Jabbar. And so he drove a pickup truck into a crowd on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. He had planned this out. And after he went down the street on the sidewalk and he tried to kill or hit as many people as possible. And in fact, he did hit quite a lot of them. There were 15 people who were killed, including himself. Well, he was after he stopped the truck, or the truck stopped actually when it hit something and stopped. Then he got into a gunfight with the police, and he was shot and he died. And so, 15 people—I mean, well, 14 others were killed, and 35—at least 35 others were injured. And he is a was an American-born resident of Houston, Texas. He, they're trying to call it a domestic terrorist attack because so far there's no evidence of any direction from ISIS. But I really don't think you can call it that because I mean, it's questionable because he was certainly influenced and radicalized by ISIS. So perhaps they didn't exactly give him a map, and tell him step by step. But he was radicalized and he learned these things online. At least we think it's online. And so, it's kind of hard to, he was born in America, that's true. And he was in the military for America. And he got m medals as well. So he, actually, his whole name is Shamsud Din Bahar Jabbar. He was 42 years old. He wasn't on any terrorist watch list. That's a new one. Often they are. He was born and raised in Texas, and he was s somewhat raised, to some degree, raised as a Christian, but then he converted to Islam, and he stayed converted to Islam until his death. Now, he came from an African American family. His father was a convert to Islam himself. His father was born in Houston too, but he converted to Islam, and he took the name Young Tu Jabbar. No, he no, sorry, he changed his name from Young to Jabbar. So that's how the terrorists got that. Obviously influenced by his father, converting. And he has a history of some misdemeanors, some minor, relatively minor infractions of the law. And then he was in the army for 10 years as a human resources specialist and an information technology specialist. He went to several places, including Afghanistan, and he was discharged from the army, and then he was in the reserves, and then he went to school, college in Georgia, and he got a bachelor's of business administration in computer information systems. He was divorced three times, obviously not easy to get along with. And then he the third time, well, no, he was married three times. The third time he was separated. At the time of the attack, he was separated, and his wife was telling him that she wanted to divorce him. So that was the the final straw. So they were separated. And he was living, so it was a combination of things. His problems with relationships, and also he at one time he was doing very well. He was making 120,000 a year in a job that took, where he was able to use his tech skills. And then these divorces, and he has three children. So these divorces took their toll because, he had to pay child support and alimony, and so he wound up not having very much money at all. In fact, his house was in foreclosure, or was about to go into foreclosure, and the future was not looking bright. So let me tell you some more of the. Let me tell you about. In fact, while he was in the army, he received a Global War on Terrorism Service Medal. How's that for irony? And he did a good job in the service. And he did. I mean, it is so ironic. So the question is, how could someone who joined the military, who risked his life for America, then ultimately become radicalized and create a terror attack? Well, I'm going to get into that in a little while. So he won these medals. He won other kinds of awards as well. He had these various. I don't know if I said already, but one of the places he was in Afghanistan, and clearly that would have had tremendous impact. Now, one and actually the other terrorist in single quotes who created the C Tesla Cybertruck explosion, he was in Afghanistan too, and in a number of other places. And one of the things for why I think both of them turned against, well, the second one didn't really turn against America, but the fact that Biden surrendered in Afghanistan has had an impact, continues to have a tremendous impact on the world. You may have heard me talk about this before. But in terms of the soldiers, the troops, it has discouraged people from joining the military, any branch of the military, because they were treated so badly. And this surrender after 20 years, I mean, yes, you know, maybe it was an okay idea to get out, but not in that kind of a way, which put all their the sacrifice that they gave to made it seem useless. It was for nothing. And because if they would have, if you know, if America would have gotten out in a better way, in the way that Trump was tr or had arranged for it to, for them to get out, then you know, with agreements along the way, that's one thing. You know, that wouldn't they would their service wouldn't have been for nothing. But just throwing it all away like Biden did, it was such a oh, so treated the servicemen so badly, such a diss, such a horrible way to us to treat them, and therefore, of course, people's after that, like today, for example, there are fewer people joining the military from America today, than before because of this, and also, of course, because of how woke the military has become. So it's no wonder that people who were there, you know, serving in the military there, had got a very bad taste in their mouth from this dismissal of them, you know, this lack of appreciation, and it did something to them psychologically. Another interesting fact is that both the New Orleans terrorist and the man who ran his car, exploded his Tesla Cybertruck in Las Vegas, the would-be assassin of Trump, Ryan Ruth, all three of them, at one time or another, they haven't yet, or they're not telling in any case. We don't know, I don't know whether it was, they haven't reported yet, what years these people, whether they could have been there at the same time, whether all three of them could have been there at the same time. But Ryan Ruth apparently made 100 trips to this Fort Bragg, which is now called Fort Liberty, and that is in North Carolina, which is very strange. I mean, is it a terrorist training site? Anyhow, so there are these coincidences. Another co coincidence, in single quotes, another co so-called coincidence was that the terrorist in New Orleans and the man in Las Vegas used the same car app to rent a car that they used to make the attacks. Now, the as the man as Jabbar was driving from Texas to New Orleans, he made a videos and he referenced the Quran, and at first he talked about wanting to kill his family, and then he decided that he instead of killing his family, that he would have this vehicle ramming attack because he wanted to show that it wasn't about you know, just killing his family, that the point of it was to kill the unbelievers. Now, presumably some of his family, except for his father, were unbelievers because they believed in Christianity. Only his father had converted to Islam, so you know, presumably that is why he was thinking of killing his family. But it was all in the name, all for the sake of killing unbelievers, because that is what the Quran says to do. So, in fact, the Quran says, "Kill them wherever you find them." I'll read you some specific quotes from the Quran. First, and at his home, when the police came to his home, they found it was very interesting. They found a Quran open in sort of a position, a place of honor in his home. And it was opened to a particular passage here. It was propped atop a bookshelf. It was the centerpiece of his living room, and it was open to a passage that read, quote, "They fight in Allah's cause and stay, and I'm sorry, they fight in Allah's cause and slay and are slain, a promise binding." So that comes from verse 9111, and it expounds on Muslims' responsibility to kill Allah's enemies and to be willing to die for that. And as a reward for that, being willing to die for the mission of killing Allah's enemies, they will get eternity in paradise. So now these are some of the videos that he posted on social media. The first one was where he talked about murdering his family and friends. And then he realized that if he killed them, the media coverage of his attack wouldn't focus on, quote, "the war between the believers and disbelievers." And then it talked about how he joined ISIS, and how it showed his last will and testament. And they were able to get a lot of information from three cell phones and two laptops that were recovered from an Airbnb in New Orleans, where he had gone before getting into his truck and ramming a sidewalk in New Orleans, down Bourbon Street. So I'm going to talk to you now in the next segment. I'm going to talk to you about this attack, or well, it wasn't attack. Actually, interestingly enough, it hits a little close to home because I've stayed at that hotel in Las Vegas, the Trump International Trump Hotel, and so it was kind of a little eerie to hear that that is where he exploded his truck. His T Tesla Cybertruck, because it was right in front of, right at the entrance to the hotel, which is all glass, and so I have thought about how long I spent going in and out of the hotel, how many minutes, how that could have been me, who got injured. All right, it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't matter who it was. It's the idea that some, of course, these explosions could injure people and did. So I'm going to get to his story, which, that was interesting because that hit the media and was like gone in a flash. It's so interesting how things that and just like what I was reading about the Quran, and I'm going to tell you some more stuff about his radicalization, the New Orleans attackers' radicalization. And that's the part that you probably have not heard because anything that gets a little too close that could be considered Islamophobia, right? Instead of being considered being concerned and wanting to have protection and wanting to know what we can do to stop these terror attacks, in order to stop the terror attacks, we have to understand why they happen in the first place, which means understanding how and why people get radicalized. And I will be telling you about that. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol Lieberman, your terrorist therapist. We're talking today about terror trifecta, foreshadowing more in 2025. So I was talking about how three things happened on January 1st, which, as you will remember, well, as you will know if you listen to some of my, I often talk about in my podcast how the terrorists don't just pick dates randomly and don't just pick places randomly, although I'm not quite sure why he picked Bourbon Street in New Orleans. But well, I mean, for one thing, there were the revelers, and you know, it was early in the morning, and people were out in the street, you know, celebrating New Year's Eve still. And I mean, early in the morning, like it was around 3 o'clock in the morning. So on that day, so it is no coincidence that these things happened 1, 2, 3 on January 1st. Certainly with the first one, he's, and then and even the second one. So the second one that we're going to be talking about now is the Cybertruck, Tesla Cybertruck explosion that was perpetrated by Matthew Allen Livelsberger in front of the Trump International Hotel in Las Vegas. Now, some people will say that this isn't a terror attack per se, but because he wasn't, you know, he didn't commit to ISIS or Al-Qaeda or any other terrorist organization, but he engaged in terror tactics. And he was doing it for a positive reason, but it was still a terror attack. It did cause terror. It was like a reverse terror attack, and I'll tell you why. And you know, I don't think, I mean, I'm sure you've probably heard about how there was this attack, this explosion. They stopped calling it an attack pretty quickly, but an explosion in front of the hotel in Vegas. And they you know, stopped calling it terrorism, and they stopped talking about it pretty quickly because of what this what his reason was for doing this. So you know, and terrorism in general is the idea of using terror, using a terrifying doing something terrifying to influence people, either a country or a state or a group of people, to influence them politically, to influence them in a way to make something happen, and by intimidating them, you know, using violence to intimidate people, creating terror to intimidate people to make a point. Livelsberger was doing just that, and he, when he exploded his truck at 8:39 in the morning. And now they're saying, and this is very strange, you know, this part still doesn't quite hang together, but they're saying that before he exploded the truck that had, you know, just like the one in New Orleans, they made explosives, homemade explosives in different ways. And so that's why, you know, when they rammed into something, it exploded. So but they're saying that Livelsberger killed himself with a self-inflicted gunshot wound to his head, and then there was the explosion. Now, I guess that could have happened if you know, if there was a way of sort of remotely setting the explosion to happen seconds after it. It just seems obviously if he shot himself in the head. He wouldn't really be able to explode anything, to do, you know, to create that explosion, unless, you know, he had his hand on it. I mean, there are ways to explain it. It just I'm still not buying it 100%. But anyway, he had firework mortars and gas canisters in the truck, and of course, Elon Musk is pointing out what a great car Teslas are and great trucks. Because this explosion stayed within the truck, and it didn't very, you know, some of it of course got out, but a relatively small amount because it's so strong, was his point, that it contained the explosion. And I guess you could deduce from that if you were ever in an accident in a Tesla Cybertruck, you'd be pretty well protected from the outside too. Now he was still on active duty. He had he was off. He had a pass, but he was still considered as a soldier in the Army Special Forces on active duty. And he they're still investigating it as a possible terrorist attack. And again, it still fits that different definition, whether he, even though he really wasn't connected to a terrorist organization. They found in his phone two letters, and he, in these letters, he denied, and it was in his, the phone was burnt, of course, because it was in the truck. But they were able to get out the letters. I know some people are questioning that part too. You have to question everything, really, but it seems like it's true because he also sent a letter to someone, and I'll tell you about that. So in the letters, the two letters that they found in his truck, he denied being a terrorist. He admitted that he was using explosives, but he said that it was to convey a political message. So that's like a terrorist. But his message was a positive message. He was trying to do something good, in other words. And his message was that he was trying to get people to pay attention to the drones. Because in his from his experience in the military, he and particularly most recently, he was assigned currently to a drone operation where so he knew about this. He also was let's see, he was very high up in security, and he was a Green Beret, in fact. And I mean, it's so interesting. These two men weren't just ordinary soldiers. They were, really high up. Okay, so he also before he blew himself up, he on December 31st, the day before, he sent an email manifesto to a man named Samuel Shumate, who is a retired Army intelligence officer. And he told Samuel that he thought he was under surveillance by the US intelligence agencies because he knew about, he had a special knowledge in advanced military technologies. And he also knew about a cover-up of war crimes, particularly from Afghanistan. So he thought they were after him. Now, yes, that does sound a little bit paranoid. And yes, he did have PTSD, but he was making a lot of sense. He had shown no suicidal intent before this, but he was trying to get people. Well, he didn't want to go to let's see. Well, people are trying, some people are trying to say that this is trying to blame this all on PTSD and all on mental health issues. But, what he was doing really made a lot of sense because what he was trying to do was to alert people, especially Trump, that's why he did it at the Trump Hotel, and to the fact that the drones flying over America are dangerous, that they come from China, and that only China, from his experience in the military and his work, he knows that the only people that have this kind of advanced drone technology are America and China. And he wanted to get attention. He wanted to wake people up to the fact that this is very dangerous, that that we can't just keep letting this these drones fly overhead without figuring out what they are and trying to stop them. Now, I've been doing a lot of interviews where I've been talking about the how we have to get to the bottom of these drones, especially with the fog as well. And nothing seems to be happening. The White House is denying that it's anything bad or anything to worry about. And the FBI, the CIA, the Homeland Security, nobody's saying nothing. And clearly, this it's crazy. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, do I have to drive? Do I have to make a sort of terror attack to get attention to this? I mean, I don't know that his attack really did get the attention, at least enough. It did for a few days or a week or whatever, but we're still not finding out what these drones really are. And I think that you know, I mean, you know, in a way, he was a hero. He sacrificed himself. I mean, you know, when he joined the military, and joined the Green Berets and all that, he was willing to sacrifice his life for America. And basically, that is what he did here, just in a different way. He sacrificed his life to warn Americans about, you know, these drones. And let's see. He talked about that the Chinese submarines had launched unmanned aircraft along the Atlantic coast as part of a broader intelligence and surveillance strategy. I mean, it is really just like their balloon. It's just so stupid that we are doing nothing and sitting. I mean, I don't understand, to be honest, I don't understand this. I don't, I mean, have Americans become this lethargic or this complacent or this too tired, you know, exhausted, crisis fatigue, that we aren't demanding that somebody pay attention, somebody tell us what's going on? I don't get that. You know, I'm doing my part by trying to bring it out in the media and certainly on my podcast here today. And you know, I mean, that's not quite as heroic as this man who, you know, exploded himself in the Tesla truck. But now when they found his phones, they found the letters, as I started to mention. There were two letters in an app that described what his motive was. So in the first letter, he said, quote, "Fellow service members, veterans, and all Americans," unquote. He wanted them to, quote, "wake up," unquote, and to pay attention, to realize that the American government is, quote, "weak," unquote, and, quote, "we are being led by weak and feckless leaders who only serve to enrich themselves," unquote. Now, that doesn't sound like he was crazy. That is a very sane description of what's going on. Okay, then in his second letter, he denied that his bombing was meant to be a terrorist attack like the ISIS attack in New Orleans, but instead a quote "wake up call" unquote towards because he felt that America was collapsing, and he said he called what he did a quote "stunt with fireworks and explosives" because that was the best way to get people's attention, because Americans, quote, "only pay attention to spectacles and violence," unquote. Then he criticized, you know, other things that the Obama Biden White House were doing. He didn't like he criticized income inequality, diversity, well, the DEI. He didn't like that. He was he's talking about the Russian-Ukraine war and so on, and criticized Kamala Harris as the DEI candidate and so on. Like, he had a number of complaints about America, but in a way where he was trying to wake people up to what was going on, and in particular to wake people up to the drones and to try to get Americans to demand to be told what these drones are, because, as I said, you know, the only people who from and he knew about this was what he was working on in the military. The only people who had this advanced type of drone was China and America. And so he believed that China was trying to spy on America. And certainly, again, that is not crazy either, since that's what they were doing with their balloon. Okay, so that's the second part of this trifecta. And the third part is the call for an Intifada revolution by the Hamas supporters, the protesters. And so this was happening on January 1st. It was happening in New York City. It was happening in a number of places. While this, I mean, imagine this. Here there's the attack, 3 o'clock in the morning or so in New Orleans, then 8 o'clock or so in Vegas, and then the Hamas supporters come out and call for Intifada revolution. They are playing off each other. Like, the supporters, the protesters, are not only playing off the real terrorists, I mean, like both, well, the New Orleans event and the Las Vegas event, but they are also trying to create more terror attacks. So all of these three things combined make life make it a very strong call for 2025 to be a year of terror. And I am not the only one who has come to this conclusion, because there was, let's see, because there was, let me see that. I'm going to be talking to you about a lot of, oh, here we go. Here. We their studies have also come to the conclusion that the terrorist threat in general, the worldwide terrorist threat, of course, I've been saying this for years, is just growing. And the October 7th Hamas attack in Israel is another strong factor that is part of this increase, part of this playing off, the different attacks playing off each other to increase it emboldened terrorists around the world, the October 7th attack. And so there's no wonder that that there are going to be more and more and more. It's just spiraling in that direction. Now, the New Orleans terrorist was when they were people, authorities were questioning why he would become radicalized after he was an honored person in the military. And so they were looking more at these things like his personal life, his relationships, his divorces, and his separation, and his lack of money, and his bank account. When he did this attack, he only had $2,012 in his bank account, and he owed $27,000 in overdue mortgage payments. And he was in bad shape. He was, I was saying before about how he originally was thinking of killing his family because they were, they had given up, or they never converted except for his father to Islam. So he felt that they had left the religion, or never joined the religion, or stopped practicing the religion, Islam. And so leaving Islam carries the death penalty according to Islamic law. So that is why, and according to the Quran. And that is why, I mean, that is Islamic law. So that is why the terrorist thought that he it would have been that his family deserved to die because they left or never joined Islam. And in the Quran it says, quote, If they turn renegade, then take them and kill them wherever you find them. And that is in 489. Also, there's a hadith that depicts Muhammad saying, quote, whoever changed his Islamic religion, then kill them. Kill him. So, in other words, he felt perfectly justified in killing his family, but only decided to not just kill his family, but instead to do this ramming attack because he wanted the media to make it a bigger deal he wanted the media to highlight the quote, war between the believers and disbelievers. Anyone who doesn't believe in radical Islam is an unbeliever, a disbeliever, and doesn't deserve to live. So now, so when they were looking for how he got radicalized, so far anyway, there has not been much emphasis on, from law enforcement or intelligence officials on the fact that the Quran itself was the source of Jabbar's quote, radicalization, unquote. So I'm going to talk on the next segment. I'm going to talk about what is radicalization, and then why it's an if you look at which I'm gonna it's like unbelievable, but if you look at how terror attacks have increased even just over the last 5 years, we don't in America we don't realize this because we are protected, so-called, by the mainstream media, but there are terror attacks happening every day. I mean, I know I say that just about every podcast that there are terror attacks happening every day. It is true, and I will tell you in the next segment where some of them have been. Welcome back to the Terrorist Therapist Show, where we're talking today about Terror Trifecta, Foreshadows More in 2025. Now, if you're not believing me yet, you will be by the time we finish today. All right. So, I was telling you before about how the terrorist Shamsud Din Jabbar, the New Orleans terrorist, how when the investigators went to his home in Texas, they found the Quran propped up on a bookcase and opened to a page like it had the centerpiece of it was the centerpiece of the living room. And this is what it said. This is what it was open to. Quote, indeed, Allah has brought from the believers their lives and their wealth because the garden will be theirs. They will fight in the way of Allah and will kill and be killed. It is a promise that is binding on him in the Torah and the Gospel and the Quran, who fulfills his covenant better than Allah. Rejoice then in your bargain that you have made. For that is the supreme triumph. That's 9111. Now, there are a lot of verses that say that. Now, it is not in the Torah and it is not in the gospel to kill people who don't belong to your religion. I can tell you this as a Jew who has read the Torah. Some of it at least, and who has been taught by people and who just knows that, I mean, that is a fact that no other religion besides Islam tells you to kill people who are unbelievers in your religion. So this is not true. Then there were lots of other verses that, say similar kinds of things. Quote, I will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve. Fight against those who do not believe in Allah until they pay the jizya with willing submission. That's the tax you have to pay if you're an unbeliever and feel themselves subdued. Oh, you who believe, fight those of the unbelievers who are near to you and let them find harshness in you and know that Allah is with those who keep their duty. So let's see. Yeah, so the people are asking questions, when did he become radicalized? But they're not really asking deeply enough, what does becoming radicalized mean? And so if, in other words, there is enough in the Quran. I just gave you a couple of examples. There are many others that just instruct you, if you believe in the Quran, that instruct you when you meet the unbelievers, strike their necks until when you have subdued them, and so on. So, he has the Quran, he's read it, presumably, or at least some of it, and it says it in many different verses. So that's all you have to do. especially, if he converted to Islam, then that is what he believes. So now there have been more than, this is a mind-blowing statistic. There have been more than 47,000 terror attacks carried out since 9/11 2001 around the world. 47,000 since 9/11. So, we think about how many you hear each day. One, do you ever hear about a terror attack in a day, in a week? Probably not. I mean, other than what we just heard about on January 1st. So people who are radicalized are simply people who take the instructions in the Quran to heart. They think they're being good. They're acting according to how they're supposed to act by the book that they believe in. So that's what radicalization is. Now, how does the Islamic State, we're talking kind of specifically about ISIS here. I mean, of course, there are all different, there are more terrorist organizations than we even know about. I mean, we know about ISIS, we know about Al-Qaeda, we know about ISIS-K, we know about, I mean, there's Hamas, and there's a whole bunch of terror groups. But now ISIS has a particularly good, strong way of radicalizing people. And that is because they have good publicists. they go all out in media, in trying to convince people to become an ISIS follower. So let me tell you, and it's very sophisticated. I mean, I've described in previous podcasts some of the things that they did, like, for example, for New Year's Eve. I don't know about this year, what they used this year for New Year's Eve, but last year they used a picture of the ball going down in Manhattan in New York City, and the like a terrorist, in the shadows. And in fact, there were terrorists in the shadows, if not, it was either last year or the year before. But anyway, so they have very, very powerful pictures and very powerful words, very convincing. And so for example, the flag on the truck of the New Orleans terrorist, as I was saying before, that was a similar flag to the ISIS flag. And the ISIS particularly did a campaign just before, just they always do a campaign during the holidays, Christmas and New Year's. That is their particularly strong time of barraging people online with why you should join ISIS. So they had a campaign this year with a flag on a truck, and the words "Run them over without mercy." Then they have an online weekly newsletter called Al Naba, or The News, and that is talks about the latest exploits of ISIS, you know, it kind of like boasts about all the violence that they're perpetrating, and you know, how brave they are and all of that, and how violent and dangerous they are. And it encourages, the point, of course, is to encourage followers to commit acts of violence. They particularly cover all the attacks from that week, and they count up the number of attacks and casualties, how many people they killed, how many people they injured. And that is, you know, very exciting to some people who then think, well, I want to do that. Originally, El Nabo was published through the messaging app Telegram and other platforms, but anytime one of these platforms was shut down, they had to find another way to disseminate it. And they used Twitter and Facebook. And, you know, I think Twitter, I mean, that's, I don't think they get very far with Twitter, but they try. Certainly on Facebook and other social media, they get their, trying to get their messages across. And when their profiles are blocked, they just create new ones. Also, they work on the dark web. So, yeah, so at first, you know, the terrorist organizations were trying to get people to come to the Middle East and join their organizations, you know, in person. But then they have been telling, they've been trying to reach people who are dissatisfied with their life, who are angry with the government, who, you know, have been taught to hate America, and so on. And they get these lone wolves to carry out their dirty work. Now, here are examples of ISIS, just ISIS. Now, we're not talking about Al-Qaeda or any of the other terrorist groups who have also been carrying out terrorist attacks. But just looking at ISIS, here are the some highlights of the past 5 years, or lowlights. Okay, so let's start with 2020. Now, one of the reasons why there aren't more, well, first of all, you know, in when COVID was happening and people around the world were locked down, the terrorists weren't able to have attacks where they would have a lot of casualties because people weren't on the street for ramming attacks or weren't going to concerts and that kind of thing. So now that we are out of lockdowns, of course, that's until there is going to be, there's another COVID type illness on the horizon, and we're probably going to be asked to lock down again. But all right, we'll deal with that when that happens. I hope people aren't going to be sheep this time and just follow along. But anyway, so here, looking at the past 5 years, so starting with 2020, there was a double suicide bombing in the Philippines. There were also the killing of four people by a gunman in Vienna. These were in 2020. Now in France, there was the beheading of a teacher in 2020, but France has terror attacks every single day. Again, you know, some of them are small, they're in the streets, like they're in the south. Not all of them are in Paris, but they take knives to cops or to little old ladies crossing the street, or priests, you know, on various people. But you know, and they do it quietly. They don't need a gun, they take a knife. Anyhow, so in 2020 in France, there was the beheading of the teacher that, of course, made international news. And there was the fatal knifing of three people in a church in Nice in 2020. You may remember that. And then in 2021, there was the fatal stabbing of a British member of parliament while he was meeting with constituents inside a church in a seaside town. I did one of my podcasts on that. I also did podcasts about the teacher who was beheaded. Anyhow, you can find some of these things in previous podcasts. Then in 2021, there was a suicide. Yeah, 2021 was the big one. That was in Afghanistan, in Kabul, the international airport in Kabul, when a suicide bombing killed 13 US troops and roughly 170 civilians. That was in August of 2021. And the world has not recovered from that yet, from the surrender. Also in 2021, there was the stabbing of six people at a supermarket in New Zealand. And in 2022, there were two attacks in Israel that killed six people. There was a mass shooting in Oslo that was targeting LGBT pride events. It killed two people and wounded 21. Then there was a bombing in 2022 still. There was a bombing in Iran that killed about 100 people attending a ceremony honoring Soleimani, the deceased Iranian general. That was just over a year ago. And so that would have been 2022 or 2023. And then in 2023, there was the killing of a teacher in France, a small city of Arras. And also in 2023, there was a fatal shooting of two Swedish soccer fans in Brussels. And in 2023, there was the killing of a worshiper at a Catholic church in Istanbul by two gunmen. There was also a mass shooting at a suburban Moscow concert. You remember that, in a concert hall that killed 145 people and injured more than 500. That was in March 2023. Also in 2023, as you can tell, in each year the numbers of attacks are going up. Are you following that? We're still on 2023 here. The fatal shooting of six people near a Shiite mosque in Oman, a foiled plot to bomb a tail. Oh yes, remember that? Now that's 2020. This one is 2024. The Taylor Swift concert, that was a foiled plot this past year. This was in Austria. There were the two teenagers who had this plot to attack the concert goers and could have killed hundreds. So that was 2024. But then there were the fatal stabbing of three people at a festival in Western Germany. And then there are ongoing attacks in Afghanistan, in the Congo, in Iraq, and Niger, and Pakistan, and Syria. So why is this happening now? First of all, in West Africa, there are often coups, as you know. The leadership keeps being killed or dethroned or whatever, and so it's very easy in all this chaos to all these coups to create attacks. Then, so these are like four reasons why there have been more attacks. This is the in Africa, that's why. Then, of course, the US withdrawal from Afghanistan, and that reduced the pressure on ISIS-K in Afghanistan. And since then, ISIS-K has expanded. There are no Americans there to pay attention to what's going on in Afghanistan, so they are plotting away. ISIS-K was behind the Iran bombing and the Moscow concert attack and the Taylor Swift plot. And the Taylor Swift plot, these two Austrians were radicalized online. So the third reason for why we have more attacks is because ISIS has begun to reassert itself in parts of Iraq and Syria that it once controlled. And then, last but not least, the Hamas October 7th attack on Israel. And that has encouraged more attacks all over the world. So, if you put this October 1st attack October 1st. No, January 1st. If you put this January 1st, New Year's attack, on top of these four reasons for why attacks have been increasing altogether, for all these reasons, and now we have these three, this trifecta that brings it even more to the attention of the world, that encourages more terrorists, whether they're lone wolves or whether they're terrorist cells, sleeper cells. It is, it acts, they act as encouragement for other terrorists or wannabe terrorists to follow through and to join a terrorist organization, or just to do a lone wolf attack themselves. So now what should we do? Not hide under the sheets, but kind of like the hero, I call him a hero. He injured six people in the attack on the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas. That injured six people, and I mean, it didn't kill anybody except for the guy who, supposedly killed himself. I mean, there were theories that he killed himself because he set the car on automatic, the self-driving, and told it, to drive into the hotel, or to drive, up to the hotel. I don't know. I hope we're going to be hearing more about that. But that part really, the details aren't really important. What's important is that he sacrificed himself to try to wake America up to these drones in particular, to the fact that countries, and he mentioned, Russia, China, North Korea, different enemies of ours are at the gates. And we need to be paying more attention to all of this. And so that is the message that whether it's the drones, of course, I'm very hopeful that when Trump gets inaugurated on January 20th. By the way, I'm going to be going to the inauguration and some of the balls. I of course, that is a prime target, the inauguration, the throngs of people who will be outside watching the swearing-in ceremony. That is, of course, a prime target for terrorists. However, I am counting on the fact that that will also be a prime target for security. I mean, hopefully security will be examining everything. No, so that there are no bombs under the seats and that, well, that kind of thing, or actually even there's some standing room. So hopefully the areas, let's just say that, the areas where people, where the audience stands or and watches, hopefully the security will be going through them with a fine-tooth comb and taking away any potential problems. And certainly there's going to be a perimeter around the area where people can watch the swearing in. So when Trump gets inaugurated, remember he was the one who destroyed the caliphate in the Middle East, and he has been tough on terror, which is why I think I've said in one of my previous or one or more of my previous podcasts about how Iran is trying to get things in now. Iran is seeing, it's not just Iran. I mean, I'm sure you've seen what Biden is doing in his last days in office. He's trying to make as much destruction as possible. And there's still a lot of time left between today and January 20th. So I'm sure when Trump gets in, he will be much tougher on terror, because really the White House, has been run by Obama. And I'm so happy to see that there are more people coming out and acknowledging, admitting that Obama is a BFF of terrorists. You know, I've been saying this for a very long time, and sometimes when I would do an interview, the host would get a little nervous when I would start talking about Obama being the most being a terrorist, really, having not forgotten the things that he learned in his madrasas, you know, as far as how destroying Israel is the number one target of terrorists, and killing Jews is the next target. So I don't think that he has forgotten any of that. And also, of course, the West, not just Israel and Jews. That is those are the canaries in the coal mine. And the rest of the world is next. And you know, of course, Europe is already being overrun. However, there is hope. There are a lot of signs of hope in general. You know, in Canada, Trudeau just resigned. He was allowing a lot of terrorist activity in Canada, and a lot, same for the same reason as Europe. You know, there were a lot of migrants from radical Islamist countries. He was just letting them all in and letting them do whatever. So he resigned, and then some people in Europe, countries in Europe, are beginning to wake up too. So there is hope, but first we have to really be aware that this is going to be happening, and we have to watch our surroundings, and we have to call upon our leaders to be honest, you know, and that starts with the drones. So, let me ask you to contact your congressman or woman and try to get answers to the drones. And that's a good start. Because this is really crazy. We're letting these things fly above our head. And you know, children, I mean, this is causing terror in children when they know that there are these things that they haven't been told what they are. And I mean, it's not just children, it's in adults too, but like it's really even worse even for children, because they see, especially like in New Jersey and the areas where there are a lot of terrorists, a lot of terrorists. That was a Freudian slip, a lot of drones from terrorists. Well, I mean, China isn't aren't that's not they aren't they don't they aren't exactly terrorists, but I mean, whoever is the one who's it could be Iran, who's ever the one in charge of these drones, we need to find that out, and we need to stop it. And I don't understand why someone hasn't shot one down by now, but anyhow, we need to wake up, and we need to remember this guy, the man who Matthew Livelsberger, who was the hero and killed himself, you know, sacrificed himself to warn Americans that we need to pay attention to what's going on and the dangers. All right, thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol Lieberman, your terrorist therapist. Please check out my website, terroristtherapist.com, and also my book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror.
If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism, the number four, kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.